It is a Monday Drive, where we begin with one of the 10 best players in the NFL being traded over the weekend. Jamal Adams is now a Seahawk, and I don't think Seattle's done. I think they understand their window is small, and they are in the process of rebuilding that Legion of Boom defense that won them a Super Bowl a half dozen years ago. Adams, to me, he's a combination of Earl Thomas's physicality and Richard Sherman's swagger and instincts. He's a guy that has a similar impact on games as Tyrann Mathieu did on defense for the Chiefs on their way to winning the Super Bowl last season. He's going to be joining the secondary that already has the Griffin brothers and maybe Quentin Dunbar, depending on what happens with this investigation. Him and DeAndre Baker were the two involved in that larceny allegation from months ago. But here's the reason why I don't think they're done. I believe the trade was made in part to create more cap space for Jadeveon Clowney. When I saw this trade, first reaction is, wow, that's a lot that they gave up. Two first-round draft picks, a starting safety. Talking about Bradley McDougald, pretty good player that they're sending to the Jets. They get a fourth rounder back. They also sent a third rounder. As soon as I saw the player in the mix, first place I go is to the NBA. I look at how teams swap contracts, swap players in order to create salary. And I think that might be what's happening with Pete Carroll and John Schneider here, as they've been unable to convince Clowney to come on for a year and to bring him back in. They haven't been able to fully entice him. I feel like adding Jamal Adams is enough motivation, potentially kicking in a few million dollars to when it hurt. That's what this creates. The Seahawks, they get a couple more million dollars of cap room, sending McDougal to the Jets. I think they're going to benefit from that. Kind of like the Clippers deal that we saw last year, where the Clippers gave up all those draft picks to the Oklahoma City Thunder to bring in Paul George. They weren't doing that just to get Paul George. They saw it as, we're trading all these picks to get George and Kawhi. If we don't do it, we get neither. Maybe that's the viewpoint the Seahawks have right now. Hey, let's get this deal done so we can bring in Jamal Adams, but also bring in Jadeveon Clowney as well. If we get both of them, it's certainly going to be worth it. I think they'll defer the money too with Adams. I think they're going to come to an agreement. But look at the rest of that 2017 draft. A really loaded draft where you have Mahomes, you have Deshaun Watson, you have Christian McCaffrey, you have, the list goes on and on and on. Alvin Kamara, Marshawn Lattimore, Juju Smith-Schuster, ton of great players. Myles Garrett, the number one pick that year. The contracts that Mahomes and McCaffrey got did not hit until after their rookie contract was completely finished. So the Panthers aren't going to pay McCaffrey the record money he got until 2022. Same deal with Mahomes. Mahomes, he's going to make $45 million a year, but starting in 2022. That allowed the Chiefs to bring in Chris Jones, and I haven't seen the full structure of that contract, but I'd imagine a lot of that's front-loaded so they can fit those $80-plus million he's due and structure that the proper way. So they can come to an agreement with Jamal Adams and have that money deferred so he's not getting it until 2022, and he might be willing to do that if it meant the team wins now. See, that's the thing. He's coming from the Jets to the Seahawks. He hasn't done any kind of winning with the Jets. He wants to win, and if he thinks deferring the money is going to help Seattle, which it undoubtedly would, I think he'd be willing to do that. With Kuechly retired, Bobby Wagner, who's on this defense, he's already the best middle linebacker in the NFL. Last year, the NFL, they do this top 100 list that's based on surveys from players, executives, coaches. I think fans have some involvement in this as well. Bobby Wagner was ranked the 15th best player in the league. Jamal Adams, I think, is a top 10 guy. I really do. Last year, I think he was ranked in the top 40, but I think he's going to take a big jump. Russell Wilson, he's a top 10 player in the league. So Seattle, They're looking at having three of the top 15 guys in football. Let's not make football more difficult than it has to be. It's about getting as many good players on the team as you possibly can. And Seattle, they have a lot of them. I think they're trying to build an even stronger Legion of Boom. If you add Clowney, I think the D-line's better than 13 and 14. With Jamal Adams, with Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, who's still around, they added Bruce Irvin. The rest of that defense looks pretty damn good, too. So I really like what Seattle's done so far. Would I go so far to say they're the favorite in the NFC West? It's tough. I probably would. Just because the Super Bowl hangover, it's a real thing. Six of the last nine runner-ups in the Super Bowl, they didn't win the division the next year. The Panthers, they're one of the two teams in the last decade to not make the playoffs the following year. And I think Seattle has gotten stronger this offseason, while that's a question mark with San Francisco. They're patching holes. They lose Joe Staley. Here's Trent Williams. They lose DeForest Buckner, who they traded. They use the draft pick that they got in exchange for Buckner to take Javon Kinlaw out of South Carolina. They lose Emmanuel Sanders to the Saints. Deebo Samuel gets banged up. Here's Brendan Ayuk, rookie wide receiver that they took in the first round too. They're replacing those starters who were so consistent for them with some uncertain parts. Seattle, they were banged up last year, and they still gave San Francisco a run. I have to believe Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, they're going to be healthier. And Seattle, you're bringing in a top 10 player in Jamal Adams. So I really like the way that the Seahawks team is coming together. I don't think they're done. I think they're going to go after Clowney. I think they're the favorite to try and land him. If they do, it could be an even stronger Legion of Boom. Seattle, at that point, would be the favorite probably to win the NFC and go to the Super Bowl. On Twitter, at SportsHubTriad. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. I want to shift things. When I think about the greatest what-ifs in North Carolina sports history, I usually start with Kobe Bryant and what would have happened if the Hornets decided to make that pick in 96 for themselves rather than select Kobe for the Lakers. Kobe tragically passed away 6 months ago yesterday. Coincidentally, 13 years ago yesterday, we lost Wake Forest coaching legend Skip Prosser. Wondering where the Deacs would be today is the greatest what-if in ACC basketball history. If there's something else that comes to mind, I'd love to hear it on Twitter at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600. I tried to think of some other ones at the top of my head. What if Sam Perkins hits that shot in the Omni in Atlanta in 1983? NC State, they were down by a half dozen in overtime pre-shot clock. They came back to win that game, but at the end of regulation, Perkins, he curled on the right wing beyond the three-point line, and that shot just went in and out. It was a quarter of an inch from ending NC State's run that year. And I think that was the closest the Pack came to losing in the run that they needed to go on in order to make the NCAA tournament and then having Lorenzo Charles dunk down the game-winning shot against Houston. If Sam Perkins hits that shot, what happens to Jim Valvano's career? What happens to NC State? Do we think of the NCAA tournament the same way if nobody makes that Cinderella run that the Pack went on? Another one centers on Duke. Around the same time, we had Jay Billis on the show about an hour ago. If you want to go back and listen to that in a little bit, we'll have that sound posted on our podcast channel. Just search The Drive with Josh Graham wherever you get your podcasts. But Jay Billis was a part of that class that saved Duke with Johnny Dawkins, with Tommy Amaker. If not for those guys, Coach K probably loses his job. And if he did, if Duke was not patient and let go of Coach K, what does Duke become? What does Coach K become? That's a massive what if. If we're doing local examples, what happens if Kihei Clark doesn't complete that pass to Mamadi Diakite and Diakite doesn't hit the shot to tie Purdue in the Elite Eight? Do we view Tony Bennett differently? I'd imagine we would. Like, would we just view this guy as a coach who can't win the big one? Would we not think his style of basketball is validated, even though he's won a number of regular season ACC championships? I don't think any of those are as big as the what if of where would Wake Forest basketball be if Skip Prosser had not tragically passed. It's the only time in the last 20 years that Wake Forest viewed Duke and North Carolina truly as peers. It was under Skip's watch. Four straight NCAA tournament appearances, something that we just took for granted at the time for Wake because of the run Tim Duncan, Tony Rutland, Randolph Childress, and Dave Odom went on in the 90s. It's something we took for granted, seeing Wake Forest go to the tournament every year. But those four consecutive appearances under Skip were then followed by a run where they didn't go. In fact, since Skip passed, Wake's only been to the NCAA tournament three times. It's maybe my favorite period of ACC Big Four basketball, where NC State made the NCAA tournament with Julius Hodge, went to the Sweet 16, I think, twice in the mid-2000s. You got Duke, which I'd argue is the most talented of the ACC Big Four, but never really could put it together to win a national championship, albeit they got close. North Carolina, in Roy's second year, won the national title against Illinois. And then you got Wake, which out of the four schools, I'd take Chris Paul over any other player. Even J.J. Redick, I'd take Chris Paul. I think he's the best point guard we've seen in the last quarter century. That's because of the recruiting of Skip Prosser. When you view that recruiting, he brings in CP3, and you might think, oh, but Josh, he's a local kid. You can't really give Skip that much credit. He wasn't responsible for where Chris was born. But what about Ish Smith, who we got a chance to coach as a freshman? How about right before he passed, being responsible for bringing in James Johnson and Al-Farouq Aminu and bringing in Jeff Teague? Would he have been able to continue that run of recruiting? I like to think so. If he does Wake Forest win an ACC basketball championship? If that much talent's coming through, I think it eventually happens. Skip Prosser. Big ACC what if. 336-777-1600 if you want in on today's show. Let's go to Brian in Yadkinville who has in on an ACC what if. Brian, what if do you have?
What up, Josh?
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, I got a what if for you.
What do you have?
What if Larry Brown had not hired Ed Manning and Danny went to NC State?
That's an excellent one, and one I considered as well. What do you think would happen?
No tell. State could have gone on a little bit of run. You know, they had the 83. They could have had an 88.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was also a question if Danny didn't follow his dad to Kansas with Larry Brown hiring Ed Manning. Would he have gone to NC State or would he have gone to Carolina? It is one of the greatest college tournament runs we've ever seen, 1988, Larry Brown and Danny Manning. It was he was just the ultimate mismatch. Nobody had an answer that entire run. I'm trying to remember who they played in the championship that year. I think it was Oklahoma in a Big 12 matchup. Now, it wasn't the Big 12 at that time, but in 1988, I think that's who they played in the championship game that year. Danny was just marvelous. And, gosh, you never really saw at that time guys that big being able to handle the basketball and move as quickly as Danny did. Let's go to Michael and Clements. Michael, what if do you have for me?
Hey, Josh. Great topic. My question would be, what if Maryland had stayed in the ACC? Do you think that they would be consistently good again?
Thank you for the call, Michael. No. I don't think they would. That quick of an answer. I think they would have a better shot than they do competing in the Big Ten. It's just such a bad fit, Maryland being in the Big Ten. I'm still not used to it. I'm still not over it. I have family in Maryland, so maybe I'm biased with this, but I just miss Duke playing Maryland. I miss NC State at the end of the regular season facing them. Wake Forest, when they clinched a berth into the ACC championship game, they ultimately won. It was against Maryland in College Park. I just miss them being in the league. I really do. And you can't really get me that drummed up about them getting killed by Ohio State by 50 points every single year. They just don't belong there.
And I know we're getting pushed up on the five things at five, but I had to give you another little lesson in Southern cities. You did good with Yakinville, but it's almost like you're kayaking. It's Yakinville. No D Stop. At all.
Stop.
No, just give it to me one time.
Yakinville?
Yakinville. That's okay. It.
So
Yakinville.
Let me write these down. I've been doing Sports Talk in the Triad for over 2 years now. I learned very quickly, it's advance, not advance.
There you go.
I also learned it's Forsyth County, not Forsyth County.
There you go.
I learned it's Kang, not King.
There you go.
And you're telling me right now it's Yakinville?
Yakinville, not Yadkinville.
If
you pronounce it all the way through, they're going to give you the wrong directions.
Where would they direct you to?
Somewhere else. They would send you north, south, east, or west, anywhere, as long as it's not in Yakinville.
A lot of people still have issue with Dino being fired after Skip. I think a big part of the reason Dino being kept on, or them not hiring another coach taking him from being the interim coach to being the full-time coach, had to do with the class that was coming in. They wanted to make sure Jeff Teague and Al-Farouq Aminu, all these guys, remained in school, but it became clear that Dino couldn't really recruit at that high a level and manage his players the way that Skip managed them. So I had less issue with Dino being let go than I did the hires that were made. Jeff Bezdelic just didn't have enough personality. And Wake, it's a smaller school, so you need some personality in order to get noticed, or you need to be a name. That's why I didn't really dislike the hire of Danny Manning, but the extension, as we all know now, that Ron Wellman gave him, and when they gave it to him, just absolutely inexcusable. There's no other way to put it.
A much better show. The Drive with Josh Graham.
Even considering the positive test with the Miami Marlins today, which is obviously tough news, Major League Baseball probably was expecting an outbreak at some point and has plans to maneuver around it, but even in their worst nightmares, I imagine they didn't think it would come 3 days into the Major League Baseball season. But putting that aside, it's great to have Major League Baseball back in our lives, and it was great to have Adam Amin on the call for Cubs Brewers on Saturday with the virtual fans and all. He works for Fox Sports. He's going to be calling NFL games as well, and has had a history of working pretty much with every single sport, it seems like. So before we get to the baseball and a little bit of football, Adam, and your time is appreciated, I think the place we need to start, for obvious reasons, what's the best hot wing you've ever had?
Here are my two answers. If we're going Korean-style wings, because Korean-style wings are different, I go to Banchan in Chicago. It's one of my favorite kind of under-the-radar places, either Banchan or Crisp, if you're here for Korean-style wings. My favorite wings, and it's maybe not necessarily the consistency or texture of the wing. It's the sauce flavor. Like, this buffalo sauce is really good. But part of it is just, like, the sentimental value of the place itself. In Dunellen, New Jersey, there's a place called Zupko's. And usually once every couple of weeks, myself, the PR guy for the minor league baseball team, and the two beat writers for the team, we would go out and go to this place, and they'd have, like, $3 pitchers and $7 pizzas and 25-cent wings. And it was the cheapest meal you could get for that bang for your buck. It was the best pizza in that town, best wings in that town. and I have a high sentimental value for those two foods more than anything else. So those are my answers.
Do you have issue when people call all hot wings buffalo wings?
I don't have an issue with it. I think I've developed the tendency to call them hot wings as time has gone on. I called them buffalo wings, I think, the first time I figured out what they were. And you just go with it because that's what you hear. And then after that, you make your own judgments and eventually your own vernacular. And I just go with hot wings now.
Follow him on Twitter at Adam Amin.
These types of insights, yeah, rampant on Twitter. These really cutting insights.
Yeah, let him know what your favorite kind of wing is. Tell him why he's wrong and why he hates all of your favorite wing flavors. How prepared do you believe Major League Baseball was for this very scenario we're seeing right now?
It's a tough one to answer because here's what's frustrating about it. You could easily see where an issue might come from not testing daily, especially in a sport that plays daily. So seeing that from afar, when these protocols were starting to be outlined, you got to think that if an idiot like me was thinking about it, at least you would presume that a much smarter person who probably gets paid far more money than I do to be an idiot on TV, probably gets paid more money, probably is smarter than I am and most of us are, I would presume that that person would see this coming and say, hey, what about if we have a test taken on a Thursday and we don't get the result back until Saturday? I wonder what kind of problems that might bring up. And that's what's frustrating about this particular scenario, because you can see the chess pieces that could have been moved prior to prevent your king being in check right now. And that's the problem. Like, you can see these things. You can react and get out of it. You can figure it out. And listen, everybody's doing that. And the NBA has been trying to do that and plan for contingencies. Major League Baseball, I'm sure, had some level of contingency plan. It's a multi-billion dollar business we're talking about. I'd like to presume that even if they want to keep their money, then they would probably try to think about these things. So anyway, to get off the soapbox, I imagine those discussions had to have taken place, and that's why it's even more frustrating that a problem that was presumable to have happened at some point, sure enough, happened, and we didn't even get through 4 days of the season.
It reminds me of something that happened a month ago. I remember I was coming into the studio around 2 o'clock. The PGA Tour was having a press conference at, I think, 2 o'clock that day, and it was during the Travelers Championship when Webb Simpson pulled out, you had Brooks Koepka pulling out, and at 2 o'clock, there was a press conference where many thought, oh man, they're going to pull the plug and suspend the PGA Tour season. They didn't, and they said they were just going to tighten the screws up. And over the last month, they figured out ways with more, I think, enhanced testing, stricter protocol. They figured out a way to do so. So the fact that you identify, hey, daily testing is probably the answer for a daily sport, and you have a sport unlike football and basketball that has built in ways for you to make up games by playing doubleheaders, I'm confident baseball is going to steer past this and figure out a way to continue going. Does it mean they're going to go the entire way? No, but how confident are you baseball has a number of chess moves to make before they get to a place where they're in danger of suspending things?
I agree with you. As frustrated as I am about how this took place, and I'm sure the frustration comes because it came so early. If this happens in mid-August, are we as upset about it, or are we, you know, like we go, no, we got through, you know, 3.5 weeks of the season. That's pretty good. So while I am frustrated by it, I shouldn't judge it as harshly. I do think the game's not over. Major League Baseball has plenty of moves to make. We'll see what the roster maneuvering is going to be for Miami, because that's 40% of their roster, essentially, right? Like, we're talking about a significant amount of people here. So I just feel like it's a lot to ask of a bunch of double-A prospects to just jump in. I'm sure they'll be chomping at the bit to do it, and Miami's not really going to have much of a choice. Do you risk putting these guys into situations as minor leaguers where they may not be prepared? They may not be ready for big league pitching yet. So that's just the baseball aspect of it, let alone now you're asking a bunch of minor leaguers to really make this real. It's one thing when you got a 23-year-old kid and you've signed him to a signing bonus, or you drafted him and gave him a signing bonus, and now he's under the impression, well, I have to do this. This is my job. My job is to show up and do this. Well, it's a little different when you realize the risks are a step away from you. It's a little bit different now. So I have some concerns about that. I have some concerns about how they're going to maneuver with the roster issues. You know, how they're going to, you know, they're going to bring guys in from their alternate site. It's not going to be easy, but there's ways to get around it. The concern for me also lies with somebody like a Ricky Renteria, who's the manager of the Chicago White Sox. He woke up today with nasal congestion and a cough, and he's a little bit older. Dave Martinez, who had a heart procedure a year ago, is coming off very scary surgery just a year ago. He admitted today that he's scared, and he's trying to stay strong for the guys that he represents. So there's a lot of moves still to make, but you can see why patience might be wearing thin with a lot of players and people who are right in the heart of all of this, right in the heart of putting themselves at risk.
We saw the virtual fans on Saturday, and I like that. What do you know about some of the plans that are being put in place for Fox's NFL package?
Literally nothing yet. I wish I knew. I don't think one weekend and a couple of games of using the virtual fans and trying it out is going to be enough to make a major decision on it. So I'm rolling with the punches, whatever it is. I'm happy to enjoy it. We brought attention to it a couple times on Saturday. We had some fun with it. We enjoyed it. It makes me laugh. I don't really feel the necessity to rail on something that makes me laugh a little bit and gives me a chuckle when I realize it's not that serious. It's just virtual fans. And it's just pumped in crowd noise so it doesn't sound dead silent on your TV. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with showing what's actually happened and just saying, hey, it's empty seats. There is no noise. The PA's pumping in some noise. Either one is good. I have no issue with either one. And I think the debate over this is taking place because we don't want to debate about real life, and I don't blame any of us for that. So if you want to debate it, I'm happy to jump in. But I honestly, and I don't mean to say this, and you know me, Josh, I don't mean to say this in like a mean way.
Of course.
I just don't care. Like, it's funny to me. So yeah, I'll go with whatever they got.
Adam Amin on Twitter, at Adam Amin, is a big jerk face that doesn't care about any of your concerns, your team.
You're all terrible people, and I wish only bad things to happen. Okay, I don't even want to say that joke.
You grew up.
I feel bad saying that, even joking.
Yeah, you grew up. You grew up a Cubs fan, so I'm just interested. What similarities were there in the virtual Cubs fans versus Cub fans that you knew to be at Wrigley anyway?
I mean, they were essentially virtual. The guys that were, you're talking about, the guys that were on like the rooftop, they're actual fans at Wrigley Field on Saturday. So
yeah, no similarity in the behaviors though. Like, I mean, they probably get after it, those virtual fans, you know?
Here's the one, the one thing is I was laughing about, I saw a tweet that might've been Barstool Big Cat or something. It was a fellow Chicagoan. He had said, like, what, you couldn't get the virtual cup snake as is tradition at Wrigley Field. You drink the beer in the bleachers and you add the cup to the cup snake.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes through the bleachers, right? Like, so we get let's see if this Korean company that has been hired to, you know, utilize this technology, let's see if they can maybe come up with a little bit of a virtual cup snake. I think that'd be a nice little addition.
Adam Amin is with us here. In addition to being an expert on baseball and pretty much all things sports and wings, I should add, you're also a big music fan as well. I had an incredibly harrowing experience last night where I was helping my friend B-Dot from Wild and Out with this drive-in concert that they were having at Winston-Salem last night. And I'm hanging out, and I'm on stage. We all have masks on. It's safe. And the big act was Travis Porter. He gets on stage, or excuse me, the group gets on stage, and I whisper in B-Dot's ear, asking him, which one is Travis Porter? I knew the music. I thought he was a person, and it's a group. So I want it.
It's like Migos. It's not just Migos is not one dude. You know, it's not just hey, have you met my friend Migos? It's not really how that works. You know, so I actually kind of like this as a name. Here are the two naming things I like. I like when you're a trio or a duo, you have the name of a singular person. I think that's kind of funny. And I would say the same thing for pets that have human being names. I love those two.
All right.
Love musical acts that are named after one person, and then love animals that are named after people.
Let me put you to the test. I have three things here. Band or person. You got to tell me if it's a band or person. I think you're going to do pretty good with this. Let's start with Bon Iver.
Oh, that's a person, but his name is Justin.
Well, that's a band. I mean, it's a group. It's not a person.
Well, I mean, I'm saying like Bonnie, like he's the front. Are you thinking about the front man or like what's the?
Yeah. Like the way I confuse Travis Porter with being a person rather than a group.
Okay, yeah. Bon Iver is the name of the group. Justin there, is the name of the lead singer.
There you go.
Okay.
See, he's too smart for this game. So this is me being bad at it.
I'm trying to complicate something that's clearly very simple
last week,
that you put in front of me.
I listened to the Taylor Swift album. I say I like Bon Iver. He's really good. And someone says it's not a he. Blondie, person or band?
Well, Blondie, again, is a band, but Debbie Harry, to me, is Blondie.
Jethro Tull's
a band.
Okay. See, you're a lot smarter than I am. I claim to know a lot about music, and I acknowledge my blind spots. Adam Amin, it's good to have your friendship and your knowledge to make this show a lot smarter than it actually is. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
There you go. He's on Twitter at Adam Amin. You will hear him and see him on Fox Telecast, like Saturday with Milwaukee and Chicago. Am I just the biggest dumb, you know what, that's out there? Like, is there anybody dumber than me when it comes to music at this point? Like, I used to think I was really bright on the subject, but then now I'm leaking confidence.
You're just good at what you're good at.
What am I good at, Robert?
Just
let's make this a therapy session.
Just this. That's about it.
Radio?
Yeah.
So I'm like Brick?
Sure.
An anchorman?
That works.
Who could tell the weather really well, but then he's putting mayonnaise in a toaster?
Or Brick and the blonde from Mean Girls have a lot in common, or common, because they both could tell the weather.
Well, there are a lot that are blonde. And oh, you're talking about Amanda Seyfried's character.
Yeah, I thought by the description of her telling weather, you'd know what it was and not try to correct me, but I got to come with the facts with you.
That's what I'm good at.
Yep, correcting me. That's also what you're good at. You're also the best corrector on the planet. God forbid you put a pronunciation or enunciate one word wrong, and before you even finish that thought, Josh will slide in, hey, that was actually this.
I say it just like that.
The best.
Same tone.
I know. It is mind-numbing. Anyway.
On Twitter at Sports Up Giant, 336-777-1600, is there another band that you thought was a person?
Outkast could probably throw some people off.
You think?
Especially, yeah, because, I mean, they're not a thing anymore. If someone now just listens to Outkast, they're going to be like, oh, man, I love Outkast, and have no clue that there's a bunch of dudes in it.
Like, B-Dot told me that Weeknd threw off a lot of people.
I don't know how, because it's only that one dude's voice.
It's a good point, but just really the name more than anything else. Like, you're not going to think that the guy is The Weeknd.
Yeah, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. All those members.
That's
you weren't
right.
Going to bring up anything about the Migos with Adam Amin, were you? About how you thought it was Quavo?
Nope. I was hoping that some of my faults could remain just faults that we know and Adam doesn't. But you could let him know if you'd like. We need to get the Lou Williams Twitter. Because it's starting to become an American basketball tradition to dunk on Kendrick Perkins on social media, where Kendrick started trashing Lou Williams and says that Lou Williams had a past track record for doing things that were selfish, I think, was what Perk was hinting at, paraphrasing. And Lou Williams said, quote, 15 years in the business and the most dirt you have on my name is stopping to get hot wings during a pandemic? Perk, shut up and stop laughing and saying it's just TV when you run into me, too. Whew! Spicy. Not as spicy as those wings.
I don't know if Lou could get Perk like that.
No.
Though, too.
You don't want to mess
with
Perk.
You're going to have to get a friend or something.
That's right. And then he goes, but I digress. I went home to see a man off to his final resting place that was a giant in my life. I don't want to get lost in all this attention. So again, all quotes or all caps, long live the great Paul Williams Sr. Back to my quarantine so I can join my guy soon. Peace. Yeah, so it did sound like he was just grabbing some wings.
Even if he wasn't, like, he just got a quarantine. No big deal.
He's going to miss the first two games, I think.
And they're the Clippers. They'll be fine.
Yeah, well, this could have an impact, though, where if the Lakers beat the Clippers the first game on Thursday night, if that happens, then I think the Clippers are going to be 7.5, 8 games back of the Lakers, which means from that point on, the Lakers, they don't have to play anybody if they don't want to. The results won't really matter because the Lakers will already be the number one seed and have it locked down. So it does matter in that regard. If the Clippers win on Thursday night, well, then you're talking about 5.5 games, being 6 games back. You can make that up, potentially. So that would be the impact of it. I don't think anybody's going to catch the Lakers in the West, but that's the immediate impact. Without Lou Williams, the Lakers win maybe Thursday, and then at that point, the Lakers, they're just going to try and push things to the playoffs and make sure that everybody's healthy in doing so. I'm excited. Zion, he's back in the bubble. He's going to play Thursday night, I believe. He's eligible to play. He'd be eligible to play if the game was tomorrow night even. So practice a few times. Get him out there Thursday night in the opener. That's what we're all here to see. Robert, what do you got in Take It to the House today?
City Morgue.
City Morgue?
Yep.
Oh, okay. That's
it. You didn't play games on the phone, and when people would call your house, you'd answer City Morgue.
Oh, okay. I did not
usually
do that.
When you explain teases, it doesn't work, but we'll see. I'll see you on the other side.
Wow. I was just really lost. I wanted to make sure I didn't cut you off. This is what we call a great tease that Robert's going to be really happy about during this commercial break. This is a Monday Drive.
Let's go!
And QID.
You're on the Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
This is an interesting news bite. Scott Miller, National Major League Baseball columnist for the Bleacher Report, just put this out. The hope for Major League Baseball is to regroup today with the Marlins, have them remain quarantined in Philadelphia, and depending on test results today, the team would bus to Baltimore and play tomorrow's game at Oriole Park in Camden Yards rather than in Miami, where they were supposed to be originally, and they'll be there with the taxi squad joining the club. Remember, 30 active players, and then they have a 30-player taxi squad that can sub in when needed to try and get things off the ground. The Orioles, they were originally set to fly to Miami. I think they landed, or they're in flight right now, set to land around 5:30 in the afternoon, and they're going to return to Baltimore immediately. So either the series is going to get canceled or the Orioles are going to host Miami tomorrow. It should be noted, the Marlins put out a statement only saying that tonight's game was going to be postponed. So that seems to jive with some of the other reports that I'm seeing that the Marlins could be playing in Baltimore tomorrow night, playing games that were originally set to be in Miami. Time for hot takes. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Bring it. It's a segment we call Let's Get Crazy.
Crazy.
Hot takes. That's it. We will not judge a take for being too hot. We will judge it for not being hot enough. At 777-1600, I'll start us off. Ice cream cups are better than ice cream cones. I went to Little Dipper in downtown Winston on Saturday, and it was so hot, Robert, that the cone, it was impossible. It was impossible to hold all the ice cream. So I ended up being at a place where I had the napkin around the cone, but then it leaked through that, and I had to have my hand underneath the cone while I had my vanilla ice cream with Butterfinger pieces in it. It just wasn't a great look, so I'm all about the cup when I could get it, not about the cone.
How much did you get paid?
How much did I get paid?
Yeah, for babysitting that ice cream long enough for it to melt in your hands. How many scoops did you have, dude? It's melting? What are you doing?
It was at least two scoops.
Two scoops and you're letting it melt? Come on, man. You gotta get some tongue action in there. You gotta really put a working on that ice cream in the heat.
It was a big cone!
You gotta give some big licks, man!
Sarah Bradford got the baby cone, so she was able to finish that sucker in 5 minutes.
I'm sure. She's hanging out with you, man.
For me, it took about 10 minutes. Because I got a lot bigger cone.
Maybe.
I'm not gonna get ice cream and pay for the lowest priced one.
I think you let me down on the licking right there. Over the weekend, Regis Philbin passed away. The second saddest part of that is my girlfriend was like, "Do you know who Regis is?" And I was like, "Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh, Regis.
Regis. Philbin.
Regis Philbin. Anyway, Regis is to daytime television what Johnny Carson was to late night.
Wow.
I remember watching him, whether it was on...
Ellen DeGeneres would like a word.
Ellen DeGeneres can have all the words. I got a whole Webster's book full of them she can have, but she's not going to see me pass Regis. The dude holds the Guinness World Book of Records for most hours on live television.
Okay.
He's just got it down, man. And a lot of stuff I didn't know about him that was pretty cool. He used to be part of a duo with Don Rickles. He would sing... And then Don Rickles would do comedy.
I have heard that he's a good singer.
I don't know about good, but I think there's a reason he went before Don is so Don could make fun of his singing. But I'll stick with my Regis take.
Speaking of his daytime show, it was in a Seinfeld episode that Kramer debuted the coffee table book that turns into a coffee table, and inside it, it's just what celebrities' coffee tables look like. It had me thinking about... sitcoms. I think How I Met Your Mother is a better sitcom than Friends.
I don't even think that's a hot take. But I'm with you.
Some think that How I Met Your Mother wouldn't exist without Friends. To that I say, even if you're right, that doesn't mean Friends is better than How I Met Your Mother. Like, Bill Walsh created the West Coast offense in the 80s. I'm not going to say that offense is better than the iterations that have come from it in the 2010s. No, things evolve, and Friends evolved into How I Met Your Mother, and I'd take Barney Stinson over any character that Friends has to offer. Get Joey out of here and Jennifer Aniston, who I think is vastly overrated. I'm going to go Courtney Cox in terms of attractability over Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, wow, that's the hottest take. There you go. I don't know. I think the best member of Friends was whatever Jennifer Aniston's air conditioner unit was on, because he kept that apartment chilly.
Fair enough. I think Barney Stinson is the best character out of those two shows. And Jason Segel's Marshall is incredibly likable, too. I take both those guys over any of the rest. Now, the floor is lower on How I Met Your Mother than Friends. Ted Mosby, Robin Scherbatsky. Yeesh.
Yeah.
Both of them. But very high upside with Barney and Marshall. Robert, what do you got? Let's get crazy.
A wide receiver in the AFC West is complaining about his position on the NFL Top 100. Keenan Allen is not happy.
Hashtag 336.
And he is calling out a lot of other wide receivers, mostly Mike Evans, Tyreek Hill, Chris Godwin, saying, "You are not as good of a wide receiver as me." Well, in a year's time, he will be looked at as the 10th best wide receiver in the entire AFC. I've got 9 guys who I think will be better than
all
him.
All right, give me a bell. List them off. Give me the guys who are better.
And these are in no particular order. Stephon Diggs, Odell Beckham, Juju Smith-Schuster, Cam Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, A.J. Brown, Hollywood Brown, D.J. Chark, Tyreek Hill. All of those guys in a year's time will be looked at in a more favorable position than Keenan Allen is looked at now.
I just keep thinking about that 2017 draft. In fact, I want to do this tomorrow. I want to see if we're redrafting the 2017 draft, what order we might put it in. At the top, it's pretty obvious where you have Mahomes and you have Deshaun Watson. But after that, Christian McCaffrey, Jamal Adams, you go further, Alvin Kamara, Juju Smith-Schuster, Chris Godwin, Kenny Galladay, just tons of dudes. Marshawn Lattimore, all drafted in 2017. It was just an excellent draft. Myles Garrett was the number one pick that year. So maybe that's an exercise we'll do tomorrow. And redrafted the top 10 of the 2017 NFL drafts. There are so many guys, Juju Smith-Schuster included, that were picked that year. I'll close things up with this. College football. I think it's going to happen. I'm an optimist. I think it's going to happen in a bubble, though. Now, you might be thinking, is it going to look like the NBA's bubble? Is it going to look like the bubble we're seeing in the NHL? No. I think every Power 5 college football team is going to have a bubble on campus.
I didn't know if you were done or not.
Think about it. Right now, the numbers are very low. Clemson, 0 positive tests in the last month. Notre Dame, Oklahoma, they're all doing very well. It's a safe place to be. They have very high testing protocols. They could test them every day if they wanted to. Right now, I think they're only doing it once every 3 days, twice a week during the football season. They can easily adjust that. But students, when they return to campus, what's going to happen at that point? Like, then it becomes a situation where you might have somebody test positive because an outbreak happens on campus. Well, the way to avoid that is to have one dorm or one place where the athletes are all staying and they can't go in and out anywhere except if it's going to practice. You have a bubble on campus and high protocol to make sure that it's enforced. So that's how college football is going to remain safe. That is, let's get crazy. Coming up, an NFL bombshell over the weekend that could lead to another bombshell headline. This is a Monday Drive.